Talk, talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back.
Hey, we're back.
It's been a couple of weeks since we've done it.
It's been a while. It's
yeah.
Good to be back here at WSRadio.com.
Yes. Yeah, I see. For our guests, you've been drawing a giant goat face.
Goat face is in the house.
Yeah, I like that. You have to post that picture.
Do you see the nameplate? It says I Heart Jim Brewer on it.
I Heart Jim Brewer.
Didn't he do a goat thing?
Yes. So before we bring in Fahim Anwar, Jesse, did you do any comedy this week?
Well, this week has been getting ready for the tour mostly.
Yeah.
Let's see. We had OB Street Fair. So that was very busy.
Yeah.
And before that, I visited the Laugh Factory Coronado. That's not performing, but I was checking it out.
Said it was nice?
Yeah, it was cool. They're doing like a 10-week run in Hotel Del Coronado, in this sort of ballroom area.
Mm.
It was Harry Basil and Bob Zaney. It was a two-man act.
Right.
And it was cool.
Was it an hour and a half show?
It was more like an hour,
okay.
I want to say. Maybe an hour 15.
Right.
Because they didn't have a host or anything.
Okay.
But it was neat to see. So before that, I don't know, I did two feature spots in the Madhouse a weekend back or something on a Saturday.
Mm.
So
that was fun?
Yeah, it was cool.
Was that for the contest?
I think it was from the contest.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
I haven't done much. Store.
Yeah.
And then...
had some good days at the store, though, huh?
Yeah. Had some fun times. And then I actually did an interview with Abel Ventura last week, but the audio was shit. So
that sucked.
I had to scrap the whole thing.
Damn it.
Yeah. So it was pretty interesting.
Was that on a comedy trolley? Is that why the audio was so bad?
I don't know. Mm. It was just I screwed up recording.
She has a one-woman show coming out, right?
It's out now.
It's called... Look, I'll prove it to you or something?
Something like that.
Okay.
I don't care.
Did you guys talk about it? You don't care. You didn't talk about that on the...
Yeah, we did. We talked about it.
Okay.
Whatever.
All right.
The past.
Past.
And then we didn't do the Palace last night because both shows got canceled.
Got canceled.
Then we're at the Palace tonight.
Could have seen that coming, but
we tried to warn them.
Yeah, but that's okay. We're going to do it tonight, and we got one big show tonight, 7:30, tour kickoff.
Yeah.
And we're going to sell a bunch of that merch, I hope.
We're hoping.
Yeah, I've got one chance at it now, so let's do it.
All right, well, without further ado, we'd like to bring in our guest, Fahim Anwar. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good.
Fahim, you're doing the ACC this weekend, is that right?
I am doing ACC, yeah, over in Gap Plant.
Nice. Have you done that room before?
I have. I've been, I think the first time I came down here was with Bobby. Like, Bobby has me feature sometimes, Bobby Lee. And
okay.
And I came a few months later with Cliff. So I think that's how then they also gave me one of those, like, one-nighter headline things.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Kind of break you into the club. And so I think that's how they had their familiarity with me, and then finally gave me a weekend to headline myself, which is nice.
Okay. Where are you calling from, Fahim?
The Andes Hotel.
Okay.
Like, it's an advertisement for the hotel.
Okay. They got hell of a good reception there, I can tell you that.
is it shit?
We're getting every other word. I know that you're playing at the A. Something.
See.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But
does
everyone should go see
him
at 7 and 9 o'clock. No, it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
How was the show on Thursday?
It was actually good. I got there a little early. I got there at 7:30, and it seemed like it was going to be slim pickings. But then it really filled in. I was like, okay, good. I'm not depressed.
Oh, that's cool. Who else is on the show with you?
I have my buddy Michael Nochi emceeing, and then Billy Bonnell featuring.
Okay.
Woo!
Cool. Is that him in the background?
That's him. He's very excited about his name.
Good for him. That's good.
So how much time are you doing for the weekend?
An hour, but I'm, like, divvying it up sometimes. Like, Thursday I did 45 me, and then Lance Cantstopoulos dropped in and did 15.
Okay.
So,
are you splitting money with him?
You know, he just does it for the love of the game.
Uh-huh.
So I don't have to pay him.
Well, that is love.
So do you have somebody go between you guys?
Yeah, the way it works, the first time I ever did this was when I headlined La Jolla, and I was out there with Francisco Rama.
Yeah.
So I would do me for 45 up top, and then I would be like, you guys saw Francisco earlier. He does this bit about when he was living with his girlfriend. He didn't do it tonight, I really want to hear it. Francisco, come back up here and do that. And then everyone claps, you know. And then he'll be like, oh, this is weird. I wasn't planning on. So then he does like a 5-minute bit. And that gives me enough time to change. And then he goes, oh, ladies and gentlemen, like I'm getting word from the back. This guy's dropped in. Like he's come out of nowhere. Like, oh, we're so lucky to have him. And then I come back up with Lance.
And you do that for 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Does it get tiring?
No, not at all. It's actually like, because with stand-up, especially at the store, like when I'm doing, when I do him at the Comedy Store in Hollywood, because it's 15 minutes, you know, every comedian does 15 minutes.
Right.
And it's back-to-back. And there's so many acts. That's what separates the Comedy Store from any other club, is that it's just like, what was it, 10 headliners, 10, 12 headliners throughout the night, just doing 15 minutes each? You kind of, no matter how good someone is, you can, after a while, it falls into this confines of what you could do as a stand-up. You're still doing jokes, you're still, no matter how different people are, but Lance is just so out there, it's almost like a variety show.
Right.
After like, they've seen 8 or 10 comics, Lance, it's kind of like a breath of fresh air, like, what the fuck is going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, because Adam Ray did the store last weekend, and he's doing some kind of lounge singer act.
Oh, yeah.
So
I think that's just what late night at the Comedy Store in Hollywood breeds, just unconventional stuff, or you take, I guess, more chances than you would if the regular show.
Yeah, I mean, do you normally go up late night, or is it kind of different all the time?
Not anymore. Now I'm getting good spots, but that's probably been like a recent development within the last couple months or a year, whereas before I was like late night master.
Right.
Just, oh, like 12:30? 1? Okay.
Let's put Fahim up to dance.
Yeah. But I wouldn't do, well, I guess, yeah, Lance had to do his fair share of late night, but now he just does primo stuff because I like feeding off the energy of the crowd.
Mm.
So whenever it's a packed crowd, that's where Lance is the best.
And it's strictly dancing?
No, that's just for a minute up top. You know, that really sets the tone.
Okay.
That you're not going to get anything serious. You're not going to get any, like, Bill Maher stuff after I dance to electro music for a minute up top.
Gosh, do you ever do an act with, what's the guy with the drumming? These drums on the chair for?
Drums on the chair?
Oh, Brody.
Brody Stevens. You guys could do a duo thing. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah, we could. I feel like we need to spotlight too much, and it would be too hard to do a Smothers Brothers type thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, how long have you been in L.A. now?
Long Beach, 4 years, and then L.A., 5 now.
So you've been in that area for 9 years then?
Yeah.
Okay.
It says on your bio here you were formerly an aerospace engineer at Boeing, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
How long did you do that for?
I did that for about 3.5 years.
Okay, and that was designing aircraft and things like that for Boeing?
It was a stress analysis on aircraft at Boeing, yeah.
Okay, so I'm assuming that you didn't carry any of that into your act, obviously, the stress analysis.
Nah, not at all. There might be one joke. Like, if I'm trying to work on a late-night set or something, because you got to be a little autobiographical, I'll drop that factoid that, like, yeah, I used to be an aerospace engineer. I have a joke about it.
Right.
Just to get that out there, because it's interesting, I guess, and separates me from other comedians, but it's not really a part of my identity, my comedic identity on stage or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I mean, were you,
it's something you got to mention.
Yeah. Were you doing comedy and aerospace engineering at the same time?
Yeah, I actually did comedy before I even went to engineering school. I was 18 when I started, so engineering was always a means to an end.
Okay, and you started up in Seattle?
Yeah, that's where I'm from.
Okay. And how was the scene back then when you first got into it?
It was actually really good. I'm like so fortunate that I started in Seattle. There was a lot of stage time. The crowds were good. You could learn how to be a comedian and how to write a joke out there. But then you're so tucked away, you have to move to a bigger market eventually.
And how long did you stay there before you took off?
I was in basically throughout college. So after I graduated high school, that summer is when I started. And then upon graduating college, that's when I got the job at Boeing in Long Beach. And then I moved out there.
Okay. And it was a struggle for your parents to accept you just doing comedy, huh?
I had been working, you know, bowling for a while, and then I just got to a point where I couldn't do both. Or you have to make that leap, because some Hollywood jobs aren't going to be cool with you working a 9-to-5. You know, like, things are so schizophrenic, and if you're shooting something, you can't be like, well, I've got to be in a cubicle. I can't shoot this thing. So you have to make that leap eventually, and that's what happened. I had a few things, and I was like, now it's time to do it.
Well, I imagine you had some money saved up.
Yeah, there's that too. And then I would also be making money from some of these acting jobs, so it was an easier pill to swallow.
Your parents are pretty stoked now that you finally made the leap into doing your dream, or are they still...
No? Yeah, no.
Still, like, when are you going back to engineering? Is it?
I mean, hopefully never.
But, is that how your parents are approaching it? Like that?
The way I describe it is cautiously optimistic, because it's not like I'm living in some penthouse suite and I'm in all these movies and stuff. Like, I'll book a guest star here and there, maybe I'll like headline somewhere, but it's not like a super consistent thing yet. You know what I mean?
Okay. So if
I'm doing okay. I'm not making as much as I was engineering, but yeah. I think they just want to see that obvious security, and then they'll be okay.
Right. Do you have brothers or sisters?
I have a brother who's a dentist.
Okay, and they're proud of him.
Oh, yeah. He's a slam dunk.
He's a slam dunk.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, so, yeah, we got to take a break here, but we'll come back here in about 3 minutes. We'll get more with Fahim Anwar. You can check him out. The show's at 7:30 and 9:30?
I believe so. Hey, Mike, is it 7:30 and 9:30? Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, check him out. So we'll be back here in 3 minutes. Comics.com. You can listen to WSRadio.com. What are we going to talk about?
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, Jesse, we are back.
We're back.
Yes.
Guest Fahim Anwar is on the phone with us.
He is on the phone. He's still there. You still there?
I'm there, yeah, man.
So, growing up in Seattle, I mean, was your family into stand-up comedy? Were you a fan?
We know Seattle is like a big live music town. I don't know about the Seattle comedy
scene.
That's
true. Yeah, during the whole I missed that. I mean, I was a kid, so I couldn't really fully appreciate the grunge movement and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I was into, like, gangster rap at the time.
Okay.
But, yeah, that was a big thing there.
But the comics there... Comics that wear flannel as well in the grunge scene, or how does that...
I have no... Well, probably flannel, that's everywhere. That's never gone away, especially there. But yeah, stand-up wasn't really a big thing on my radar. Like, a lot of comics will be like, oh, I grew up listening to Pryor records and Carlin records and having this stand-up pedigree, but For some reason, I didn't really even realize stand-up existed, maybe until I was 17, and I think we rented Delirious, Eddie Murphy's Delirious, for my birthday. And then that just kind of put it on the map for me. I was like, oh, wow, this is the thing. And then I always loved SNL, and then I researched how people got on that show, and it was either stand-ups or improvisers from Second City or Groundlings, or more recently UCB.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went to those websites and saw, okay, how does Groundlings work? And then you have to take classes and pay money and all that. And then you have to be passed to the next class. It just seemed like a lot of bureaucracy.
Okay.
And I knew my parents wouldn't be stoked about me doing it to begin with. So to pay money to do it and go to this, it's like clown college pretty much, like, they would not fly with that. It just seemed like stand-up was more doable.
Right.
Because it was just... all do or, like, need do or die.
So you just watched Delirious and then you started writing, or?
I think it was a combination of Delirious and then me loving SNL for so long and then realizing that stand-up was a path to SNL.
Okay. And so it's really the goal. The goal is really to be in a sketch comedy show like SNL.
That's what got me into it. Now that I've been in it for 12 years, that's not, like, the end game. Of course, it'd be fantastic, but once you get into the stand-up world, you realize there are so many other avenues that are equally fulfilling. So it doesn't really matter. It's just like stand up as a springboard into many other things.
Right. You've done a lot of acting. You've been in a lot of shows now, like Chuck and other things like that. Was that?
Yeah.
I mean, did you see that?
Or writing.
Yeah. How do you compare that, or do you enjoy that as much as stand up, doing acting and shows like, you've done.
It's cool. There's a novelty in booking an acting job. It's a validation of sorts. Like, okay. Just because, I mean, you get more no's than you do yes in Hollywood. So when they say, okay, yeah, we want you to be this guy in this thing, it's validation that, okay, I'm not a crazy person still auditioning and stuff, you know? Like, all right, I do have some worth and I can act.
Right.
And then it's nice. It's a nice change of pace because you're just used to doing stand-up all the time. And it's fun to be on TV, you know? And
did you have any experience in acting before you got these roles, or was it only stand-up experience?
I mean, it was only stand-up.
You
didn't, sketches.
I got you. Did they ask you, like, to take acting classes or anything like that to do these shows, or is it?
Sometimes the shows don't, but your reps sometimes will push that. Like your agent or manager will be like, oh, I really feel like you should take some acting classes, and it just depends on you as a person. As a stand-up, you have more leverage and more power depending on what you want to do, you know? Like if you really do want to be this vessel, and you want to be like Philip Seymour Hoffman or something, then yeah, go ahead, immerse yourself in acting class. Mm. But I always felt like I'm more of a creator than I am just an actor. I like writing. I like acting in shorts. I produce content and stand-up. I write a lot. So I like to funnel my energy in creating things. So for me to, one time I conceded and I did acting class for like a month or two,
mm-hmm.
and I just couldn't do it. It's not for me. I don't like putting my energy in something other than creating stuff. You
because
know?
It's someone else's
I'm
script.
I'm good
or
enough to be a part of the conversation. Like, there's so many variables when you audition for something. Mm-hmm. They might not like you because your hair is too short, or they want to go with an Australian guy. There's so many things that you won't get a role for that are out of your control.
Right.
That it's.
One thing we talked about with a lot of people that we've had on that do a lot of auditions, do you go to a lot of auditions and see a lot of people that look exactly like you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of like, I see the goat face guys all the time at a lot of auditions.
Right.
You see the goat face, the rest of the sketch group that you're in, goat face?
Yeah, I'm in the sketch group, and we're all brown dudes. So go off a lot of the same stuff.
All brown dudes.
Yeah, I was telling you, he's buddies with Aristotle.
Yeah, Aristotle Atheris was a good friend of ours from San Diego scene. And,
yeah, I
think he's really fantastic, so talented. So you guys do a lot of sketches together that you're able to actually write as well as act in, and that's a little bit more fulfilling, maybe?
Yeah, because you have something to show for it 100% of the time. You work on an audition, you can work the hell out of it with your buddy for like 3 days. You go in, you don't get it. All right. You have nothing to show for it, really, you know?
Yeah,
right. Well, let's take us back go ahead.
Yeah. Whereas with a sketch, it lives on the internet, and it can work for you.
Yeah.
Even while you're sleeping.
Right. When you refer, do you remember your first show that you did?
In stand-up?
I do. It was in Seattle. It was the Comedy Underground. I think I did 5 minutes during the open mic.
Did it go well?
But before, I think it went okay. Yeah, it went decent.
Do you remember what you talked about?
I don't know. I bet I talked about my dad. I bet that was like a rich source of material for me at the time.
Right.
Did you ever have an act, like a dad fan act, where you would do impressions of your family?
No, I mean, maybe early on there was like some. It's hard not to when you're a kid, because like what do you know? All you know is like your parents.
Sure.
But even back then, I've always had this aversion towards talking about just like ethnic stuff, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm not like that. And I've had to fight that for a while just because of my racial makeup. Sometimes people will think that, or just like my own people, they'll come to my show and they'll think that I'm going to talk about that stuff, and I don't. I'm like very American. I have very American comedy sensibilities too. Like I was at ACC and this lady, I think she was Persian or something, she came up afterwards. It was a great show. It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes, I come here. My husband, he's Afghan. I come to your show, and you don't really talk much about that at all. And I go, no, I don't. He's like, yeah, okay. I was like, do you want a picture or something? She's like, no, I'm good.
She's disappointed in that.
So that's kind of fun. I mean,
I guess she just wanted to, like, lightly mention how she's disappointed I didn't talk about Afghan stuff.
Right.
Yeah, is that something that you've had to fight? Because I know, like, a lot of, like, L.A. guys that come down, the important thing is to be you, you know, and be who you are and show who you are. But your act is a little different. Is that something that you think you've struggled with or that you found your place?
I think it's made me find my audience longer, you know, because if I did talk about that stuff, I probably would have a much larger fan base by now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's because, I don't know, ethnic people gravitate towards inside jokes and like that. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, he's speaking to us. It's this niche thing. It's kind of a shortcut to fans.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends if your mind really works that way. My mind doesn't. I couldn't even write that if I wanted to, you know?
Right.
Like, I don't think it's that in those terms. So.
Yeah.
So no regrets for not doing hacky stereotypical stuff.
Not at all. I mean, the only reason I want to do stand-up is to talk about things that I find humorous and I love sharing thoughts. And if you guys are on board, great. But I never want to do something I think people will find is funny. Then I'm doing a job. Then I'm a slave. Why not just work it, you know, in a cubicle?
Yeah. Do you think, like, going up at those late spots of the store kind of made you be a little bit more silly?
It's definitely, yeah, take chances. It made me take more chances. I've always been able to write a joke. I've always been a good writer and stuff, but late night at the store when you're performing for five people, you realize that nothing matters. You know, sometimes as a comedian, you'll treat the show or what you're doing is so precious, and you'll need something from the audience, kind of. You want this sort of validation.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's five people staring back at you, you realize how silly this whole thing is and how nothing matters. And so your jokes and just you and your personality, you can breeze through it, go from talking to people, and you're not afraid to go off script and go back on script, you know?
Mm. Like, doing a lot of those bad spots, did you ever, like, second-guess yourself whether or not, you know, you actually were good at comedy?
I think the way you take those late night sets at the store, it can determine whether you become good or become a toxic comedian.
Because
some people will get up at 1:30 and will be like, why am I even doing this? This is dumb. Why are we here? And if you're going into it with that mentality, those people are still there.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to be there, or they're still there. And if you're not into it, then of course they're not going to be into it at all. But if you kind of want to be there and have fun, then that can be very powerful for when you actually get crowds of people.
You see that mistake a lot, though, with comics sort of yelling at the people that are there for the people that are not. You know what I mean? Like saying,
yeah,
oh, where is everybody?
If you go into it with negative energy, stand-up is so much energy as well, in addition to the jokes.
Yeah.
If you go up there with a bad attitude, then it's going to be very hard for you to get a good result out of the set.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a positive energy. Is that something you've
positive
always...
Positive energy.
That's something
you, knows what's up.
Yeah, that's important, you know? So, all right, we got to go take one more... we got two more breaks, but we're going to take a break. We'll be back in 3 minutes with Fahim Anwar and Jesse Egan. So you're listening to Comics Talk Comedy, WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet talk. Be back in 3 minutes. Bye.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, it is the third segment of Comics Talk Comedy. So, Fahim, were you on the show with Chris D'Elia this past weekend?
Which one? Which show?
Well, you know, comics follow each other on Facebook and things like that, and I saw Chris D'Elia post this thing on Saturday. Fuck this shitty-ass room I'm playing all weekend.
Okay,
it's the worst.
Ohio. I was in Ohio.
Yeah, okay. I figured it was that someplace in Cleveland, right? It was
It wasn't even Cleveland. It was just suburb, not even a suburb, it was out there, middle of nowhere. It was funny, I was on stage, I was like, you know, this city makes me wish I were in Cleveland. You know how hard it is to make me wish I were in Cleveland.
I was surprised, with him saying the worst gig I've ever done by far. I would think in a long sort of career of a comedian that there must be worse open mics or things like that. But
I think it's maybe starting from, the TV fame starting point, you know what I mean? Not like open mics in the Valley, you know?
Right. And was the show really that bad?
I think it was a combination of a couple things. Just that there was nothing to do. And they messed up a few things, too, because I think they're 3 months. It's like Hard Rock Roxino.
Okay.
I think it's, I don't know why I called it Roxino.
I think it is. Yeah, I saw that. I think it is called Roxino.
Yeah, I made fun of their rock puns for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, and
Hard Rock Roxino, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Rock.
So what made it so bad?
That's a regular comedy club there inside the casino, I'm assuming?
I guess. It's not a comedy club. It's a casino, and then it's a nice room, but it's not. Sometimes it's one of those things where people are willing it to be a good comedy room, and sometimes it takes more than just wanting to happen. They're in the growing pains, too. I think they're 3 months in of trying to do comedy there.
Uh-huh.
Normally they do music stuff.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was a combination of things. Number one, we get there, there's no reservations for us, so we have to wait a while and get that sorted out.
Okay.
And then we get a room, and then it comes showtime. Like, we got to go to the Roxino for the show.
To the Roxino.
And it's not close by, and it's not metropolitan, so you can't get an Uber or a Lyft or a taxi. Or something. And they're supposed to bring cars, so that's what you do. The dude's not there, and it's getting very close to showtime, so we have to call, and then a guy comes and gets us, but we're running late, and we get there barely on the nick of time. So that was a second fuck up of the day.
Okay.
And just the fact that we're stuck in this hotel in the middle of nowhere in Ohio, and there's no sidewalk. There's this Bob Evans, which is like Denny's, pretty much.
Uh-huh.
We ate so much of that, and we had to walk across these four-lane highways. There's no street. There's no crosswalk, so we have to Frogger it there.
Okay. So it wasn't just the shows or the club. It was everything surrounding
it. It was like the context, everything around it, too.
Yeah.
There was nothing to do in the daytime, and, again, there's no taxis, really, or if you tell the front desk, you know, hey, we want a taxi, they go, they know them by name. We're like, well, we can call Dale. So, how funny is it that, like, the city just knows who the one taxi driver is?
That's such a perfect name, too, yeah. Dale.
Oh, you must be waiting on Dale.
Right.
He going to
so
be by.
We did this two days. We took a taxi to a Target that had a Starbucks inside the Target. That was the only Starbucks.
That was
a coffee shop that was there.
Was it the highlight of the tour? Was the Target Starbucks?
No, that's what we did in the daytime. And then
how long was this?
Girl was surprised. She saw us the second day.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you guys. Like, why would you be here 2 days in a row?
How long was this tour? You did a whole weekend? Just a weekend there? Or was it a week?
It was just a weekend. Yeah, it wasn't. But it felt for like eternity.
I think
we were there from Thursday and then got back Sunday.
I see.
Yeah. No, we're actually doing like a little multi-state tour. Have you done anything like that?
No. I'll just pop out every now and then. Sometimes Bobby will hit me up in the week before and say, hey, can you do San Antonio? Or, yeah. Not like a string of dates, really.
But you'll go somewhere and do like one venue for a week or something, or a weekend, whatever it is?
Just a weekend, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, like this month was pretty cool. I haven't really had anything just packed like this month I have. I did Philly 2 weeks ago with Bobby, then I did Ohio with Chris, and then San Diego myself this weekend.
Okay. And it seems to me, because I haven't done a lot of that, but when I get to do stuff like that, the downside of this is really sort of the loneliness and boredom, which is something, I don't know about you, but I didn't really expect that when I was thinking about doing comedy. Was that?
Yeah, I guess nobody thinks about everything but the shows. What's
right.
funny, too, is that you actually performing is such a tiny fraction of the time spent.
Right.
You're on stage for an hour max. Even when you get a college gig, when you do college gigs on the East Coast or something, they're pretty much daring you to fly and pick up a check.
Right.
They go, are you willing to fly all the way out to Pennsylvania to pick up this check? Because in reality, you're only on stage for an hour.
Yeah.
You're getting paid for flying, for staying there, transporting your body.
And a lot of those college gigs are like, they're filling out their calendar. They don't care that much about the show, so you're doing...
Not only that, too, but these clubs or associations, colleges just generate so much money, and they've got to burn it. So these clubs, they can't take on new money until they burn the old money.
Uh-huh.
So they're like, all right, let's get a comedian. And then they don't even really care if... Sometimes it's a good show, but... They don't really care even if it's not, because they're just trying to get new money for the new quarter or whatever.
Right. Have you done any nooners?
I haven't done a nooner.
Okay. Yeah,
but you're obviously familiar with that term of...
Yeah.
We had Scalero on...
Comedy at noon?
Yeah. We had Scalero on talking about going to a college and performing a nooner where he was like standing on a milk crate kind of thing, and they're calling out orders from the cafeteria. And he started to relay them from the stage to these people that didn't care about his comedy. Have you had any experiences like that in college tours where it just seemed like they didn't care that you were there at all?
I haven't had any horror stories like that, but I haven't done a ton of colleges. I've done a few. I think that's bound to happen when you're one of these guys who books 80 colleges a year or 100. You're gonna statistically get some of those stories, but.
Right.
Yeah, I've lucked out.
I mean, how are you booking shows at this point? I know you have management and an agent. Are you booking out and reaching out to places, or are they trying to do that for you?
No, not really. I've kind of realized that stand-up-wise, especially when you're not a famous person, really, is just it's been on your own as a comedian, the connections you build, the friendships you make.
Mm-hmm. So it's still through comics. It's still like...
Bobby will tap me, or Chris will tap me, or ACC reached out to my people because they saw me with Bobby and Chris. Or maybe, you know, someone will go to my website, and then there's a lot of people coming to me. I'm not really having to... But I'm not touring a ton outside of my friends, you know?
Mm-hmm. So is this your first weekend headlining a club?
I've done it in Seattle, because that's my hometown.
Right. Uh-huh.
I think in California, yeah. Well, I did La Jolla. I headlined La Jolla, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So,
but still,
I think that was a co-headline thing with Francisco. So I think this is the first official, like, full-on headline.
That's pretty exciting. Do you do merch at the shows when you get to
I do don't. A... I don't have I don't have merch personality, you know?
Right.
It takes
some sort of... I don't know if I want to say balls, but like we're trying to do merch on this tour that we're doing, and nobody feels good about it. You know what I mean?
It's so hard. It's so hard to even. I'm kind of a reserved and shy dude. Even just saying what's up afterwards is sometimes hard.
Yeah,
for me to do.
They kind of assume comics are extrovert, not realizing that we sort of get that out on stage. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like people afterwards assume you're going to be like. Like probably what Dave Attell, he had to avoid people because that's the people assume that, you know, oh, he's going to drink shots with us and be
right.
You got to be like.
I'm definitely not I'm not a life of the party type guy at all. If you didn't know, you wouldn't know I do stand up pretty much.
Yeah, I get that a lot too. So you talk about.
Unless you got to know me, then it'd be funny. But if I barely know you, I'm not going to be wheeling and dealing.
Would you do merch if someone else sold it for you?
Maybe. Yeah, if I got big enough and, I have a lot of neuroses, like...
I've seen that
I don't
before.
Want people to feel like they have to buy it, otherwise I'm going to have my feelings crushed, you know?
Yeah, right. But if you're not standing there by it and someone else is hawking your shit, maybe, that may... probably not a wacky t-shirt guy. Maybe you'd go with a CD or DVD.
I don't even know what I would sell.
Right.
But what I have thought about doing, though, because... I wouldn't mind just making, if I had a CD or a compilation of sketches and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And for something for a very reasonable price, maybe just breaking even on it or making a dollar, just because I would rather have people, my art spread, than make a few money off of
Right.
Antlers.
Like, you think it would be easier to have Lance sell Fahim stuff?
There you go.
I'm sure Lance could sell so much merch.
He could sell some mixtapes and shit, you know?
He could sell the hair, the fake hair that you wear.
Yeah.
When you go
he
with
would
Bobby...
sell fake watches. He would have to stop at stuff pertaining to the show.
Oh, right.
He would sell blenders.
Cell phone covers.
Well, we had somebody on once, and he said that he toured with a guy that he would just go into Walmart and find a shirt that said, like, who farted or whatever, and then make a joke about who farted, and then sell that as his shirt after shows.
Yeah.
That was
actually kind of brilliant.
Isn't it? He didn't want to travel with merch, so he'd go and he'd buy all these crappy things at Kmart and Walmart, and then people would go to Kmart and Walmart and be like, that comic was famous. Look, his shirt is here.
Yeah, so I thought that was
Dude, that's the best thing ever.
Isn't that great?
It might be easier to sell, and you can write a joke about it.
Right.
All right, so we're going to take our last break. We got one more segment of Fahim Anwar. When we come back, Jesse, anything?
Stick around, everybody.
You're listening to WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in Internet talk. Be back in 3 minutes.
Talk, talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, it is the final segment, Jesse.
You're yes.
Tagging away over there.
I'm putting my goat face picture out there for these guys. Give them a logo if they don't have one already.
Perfect.
I'm sure they don't need this, but.
So, Fahim, you got Just for Laughs a few years back. That must have been one of the bigger accomplishments in your comedy career.
Yeah, that was a good thing to get just because comics, I think, that's one of the first things that you want to get when you get in. I got it. 2010, that's when I went for New Faces.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, though, I had been auditioning so many times. I think I auditioned 8 years before I got it.
Oh, wow.
No kidding.
So Robbie Pratt, he's the dude who, the JFL guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whenever I see him, it's so funny. He's like, I have tape on you since you were 18. So you can probably put together a time lapse of me becoming more and more jaded.
So when you audition for Just for Laughs, you have to do it in person rather than you're not sending in videos for
it? Well, you submit and then you get the in-person.
Well, even when you go to L.A. to audition, they have tape. They still tape all the showcases.
Okay.
So, but I was living in Seattle for the first 4 auditions. I would do well in Seattle, and then I would fly out to L.A., and then it would never go any further.
So right away you were actually getting... Because I know you submit, and then they pick people from that, so right away you were actually getting auditions?
Yeah, like I was lucky enough where I was seeing kind of, I was getting those shots pretty early. I think I was 18 or 19 when I first started auditioning for Montreal.
Wow.
But I don't know anybody else who's auditioned that many years before getting it.
Was there a reason? Like, was it too dirty, or was it too long, or like, what were they looking for?
No, maybe I just wasn't ready, or I don't know. But towards the end, you stop caring. And when I got it, I got some TV credits and stuff, so maybe that greased the wheels a little bit.
Gotcha.
Because you see who gets it these days, New Faces. They're already on TV, and it's almost like they don't even need it.
Old,
it's a different thing.
Old, crackly New Faces.
Right.
Right. And I did it, and it was okay. It was very whatever. Nothing really came of it. It was fun to do and to scratch it off the list.
Right.
Also, New Faces is different for everybody. Some people do it, and great things come out of it. Some people, it's nothing.
It's good credit.
But whatever.
It's a good credit either way, though, right?
Yeah. It's just it's a select few who get to do it.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Proud of that.
Do you get paid for that?
They pay... You have to pay for your own ticket out there, but they'll put you up, and they'll give you a per diem. You really don't make money.
Yeah.
They put you up at the Roxino next to you.
Not even. Everyone's staying at the Hyatt, which is nice.
Uh-huh.
And then New Faces, they like to keep you in secret till the very last minute. They try to. You don't even get to stay at the Hyatt. You stay at some, like, hostel type place. Basically. This hotel away from a couple blocks away.
Underground compound.
That's not as nice as the Hyatt. Yeah. No. But I went back last year. They had me come back to Montreal for some other shows.
Was that better this time?
Yeah, because I got to stay at the Hyatt, and then I was doing a TV taping, too. And then you're not there with the pressure of New Faces. Like, this will make or break me. You're just there to have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've seen your face.
So are you submitting for other festivals?
Not really. I would like to. Maybe I'd like to explore that. I want to try to do Bumbershoot next time because that's my hometown.
Because Seattle has a pretty big festival. You haven't done that one?
The Seattle Comedy Festival?
Yeah, I think that's Bumbershoot. Talking about another one.
Okay.
It says here that you were a series regular on season 2 and 3 of MTV's Disaster Date. Can you tell me? What did you do on Disaster? What is that show? Is that
was basically boiling points for dating. That's what it was. So friends would set up their friends on a blind date, and then you would know what she hates. The friend would tell you what she hates in guys or what her pet peeves are.
Okay.
And then, of course, you would do all those things. And then also be a character of sorts.
So were you the one going on the... You'd be the one going on the date?
I would be the terrible date, you know?
Okay. So you got to use your acting chops there on that show to pretend to be the worst date of all time?
Yeah, I had to really pretend.
Oh, yeah. Were you ever on those dates and been like, damn, I don't want to ruin this one. I like this girl.
No, but the interesting thing is, though, that kind of came fresh off of me quitting engineering. So I'm a reserved guy now, but I was even more so when I was still working in the industry.
Uh-huh.
And me having to do these characters and such, it was really eye-opening because I would be an asshole for maybe one of them. But if you're just a confident asshole, some of the girls would still be into you.
Really?
And I truly believe these girls like me better as this character than they ever would have as me myself.
Did you change your dating habits after that?
Is that where Lance came from?
Yeah, that's how Lance was born.
I'm gonna
I guess it's something that's in my mind that just be confident or don't care and everything will be all right. And so if it doesn't work out, who gives a shit?
You could literally do all of their pet peeves, the things they hate the most. But as long as you are confident and...
Touching their hair or commenting on, I don't know.
Does that disprove that they really had those pet peeves, that they really just didn't like the guys that did it to them previously? I mean, you were able to get them to still be into you, even though you did everything they hated.
I have some of the clips on YouTube. There's one to take a look at where it's the one where I play this hip-hop guy.
Uh-huh.
And I'm me, but I've got like, yo, what's up, baby girl? Like, how you doing? So I've got this like ghetto slang.
Uh-huh.
And I'm being ridiculous. And you could tell throughout the video that she's still enamored with me, which makes no sense whatsoever.
Are you allowed to date them after if they're interested?
I think that's frowned upon. I never did that. It was usually, you know, hug, here's your $60.
Right.
And then I'll never see you again.
Oh, that's too bad.
It'd be funny if you went on a second date with them, but then act like yourself. And they'd be like, wait, where's that guy?
Right. And then she hates the real you.
Right.
You're not nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny.
And how did you audition for that?
Yeah, I mean, how did they pick you straight out of engineering? Like, all right, you're going to be this wacky bad
dude.
Well,
I would still audition for stuff.
Okay.
I don't think anybody really knew I was an engineer when I would audition. Maybe it would come up. I don't know. But I went in. This is 495 Productions, the same people who do Jersey Shore.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that picture on your website with Snooki. That must have been a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Normally, I don't like taking photos with celebrities. I feel like I'm bothering them. But with Jersey Shore, I feel like they're mascots, and I feel okay about it.
Definitely. That show was amazing. So, I love that.
Yeah, I went and auditioned, and they did like a trial. You know, they just pretended it was a date, and then just from that audition, I got it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming up to the end, so we normally like to ask this simple question. Two questions, really. What is the worst show you've ever done?
The Roxy.
The worst stand-up show?
Yeah.
Is it in a little place in Ohio?
Story. I told it a couple times. I might probably tell it on stage sometime. I got booed at the Apollo by 4,000 black people.
Wow. You win. I think that's the best one we've had so far.
How far into comedy did that happen?
I was 19, I think, so like a year in, or a little less than a year in.
Okay.
So how did you even book the Apollo?
Well, it was the Apollo Theater Amateur Night on tour, so they would go to big cities and have the Apollo in that city.
Okay.
Seattle was on the stop. I auditioned. Out of 342 people, I got in.
Oh, wow.
And I legitimately got in. It wasn't like I was god-awful and they're like, what, feed him to the wolves?
Uh-huh.
I really did get in because I was funny.
And there's 4,000 black people in Seattle?
This night, though. Okay. No, it wasn't all black. It was dominantly black, though. I mean, it's
yeah.
hollow. But,
uh-huh.
But it's just funnier to say I got booed by 4,000 black people.
Right.
And
how quickly
yeah,
in?
Then it came to, how quickly in?
Yeah, how long did it take?
Oh, I was probably up there for 5 or 10 seconds before the booth came cascading
five
down.
5 or 10 seconds.
They're not a patient crowd.
5 or 10 seconds. So they couldn't really even absorb an opening joke. It was just...
I said, opened with, hey, guys, my name's Fahim Anwar. It's like an ethnic name. Afghan, to be exact. I think this was kind of right after 9/11, too.
Okay.
So they weren't stoked about that. And then one booth turned to 4,000. And
just the word Afghan did it? That was all it took was the word Afghan? They started booing?
I think that had something to do with it.
Wow.
And I wasn't even going to open with that material, but during dress rehearsals, I was starting with the hip-hop stuff, and mm-hmm. the producer was like, hey, we think you should start with the Afghan stuff. And then me being so green, I'm like,
yeah.
older people know better than me.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, okay.
Yeah, hip-hop, schmip-hop, let's talk Afghan stuff.
That's good.
Did they have that Sandman guy to come and sweep you off the stage? Or they don't do that
a siren went off, uh-huh. and I believe someone tried to sweep me, but I'm too familiar with Apollo for that to happen. I walked off as soon as I heard the siren.
Uh-huh.
I will not be getting swept today.
No, thank you.
Lastly, is there a show that sticks in your brain as the best show you've done?
Best show. I mean, recently, probably when I was doing Lance Can't Stop with the Comedy Store and I was destroying this heckler.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
The clip is on YouTube.
Oh, I saw the clip. It's great. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah.
So,
thanks for having me.
7:30 and 9:30.
ACC.
Check them out. Thank you,
Anwar.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Guys.
Bye.